comments on Serotalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotech Corporation, its staff, management, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. And welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 108 for June 30, 2011. Today's topic is This Month in Access Tech for June of 2011. This is Michael Loft. And our guests this evening, as it is in the United Kingdom and Ireland, will be talking and giving their views on some of the big stories that came down in the month of June. So let's welcome our guests, and I will introduce each by name and then give you a chance to tell a little bit about yourself and let our users get acclimated to your voice. First up here is Mr. Damon Rose. Thank you for joining us tonight, sir.
Hello, Michael. Yeah, I'm formerly an interactive producer at the BBC until a few weeks ago, and now I'm more of a kind of journalist at BBC News. And I used to host a show on blindkiss.com some years ago that people may still remember.
Wow, we got to talk about that life at the BBC, which was part of the confusion today because I didn't realize there's a difference between the terms GMT and Universal, and for half of the year, they are not the same. They're 1 hour apart. But anyway, that's just FYI, some folks should know. Also joining us, calling himself Digital Dara Haley. Am I saying that correctly?
Close enough. Dara O'Haley, a.k.a. Digital Dara. And actually, yeah, I remember that Blank his website. That was cool. Yeah, a lot of
thank you.
Articles and that were really interesting. Yeah, www.digitaldara.com is the address, and I'm a blind system administrator in Ireland.
Okay, and also joining us is Steve Nutt.
Hey everybody, I'm Steve, and I'm from a company, I run my own company with my wife Angie, who is my rock, and the company is called Computer Room Services, www.comproom.co.uk, and I'm just generally a tech head and like to mess around with things and have connected fun.
And you also sell mobile phone technology, right?
We sell a lot of mobile phone technology, mobile speak, mobile accessibility talks, and so on.
Okay, well, very good. There, maybe the first couple times you speak, go ahead and state your voice or make sure our users are acclimated to you. But Skype willing, we seem to have great connections. Let's hope that holds up here. What I'll do is throw out some topics, and instead of calling on anyone specifically, you guys can jump in. And that seems to come more naturally for folks in the UK and Ireland, at least my experience, not the stereotype, but more likely to speak your mind, whereas here in the States, a lot of folks are more complacent. I have to call on them by name before they'll speak up. But
hey, we're more argumentative. You get in your face.
We're just trying to talk all over each other.
Okay, I guess one of the first big things was the announcement of iOS 5, Apple's next operating system for iPhone and iPod Touch and iPad, and a related article that came out after the announcement talking about the features. It claims it was all features, but I don't see everything here. But there's some accessibility enhancements, so that got our attention. I guess custom vibrations, so that we can know specific people who are texting us when we're at work in a meeting or something. We know how this is important. I need to step out of the room. And also some, I guess, custom visuals, some kind of flashing, so that we can tell certain people of getting calls and so forth. So maybe some tools for deaf folks as well. But any thoughts on just kind of iOS, or maybe the first question to ask, is Apple as popular in the United Kingdom and Ireland as it is in the States?
I would say so.
Definitely.
So, yeah. One of the things I'm looking forward to is the new notifications. Because at the moment, iOS notifications are horrible. You're typing a text message and you get a notification. It comes over the top. You have to close it. You know, what they're doing now is just copying Android, really, and having a notifications bar type thing, which is, I think, is really nice. So that you know you've got your notifications in a place, but you have to go and get them. And also button labeling, Michael. Did you notice that one where you would be able to custom label, you know, buttons that are not labeled in the iOS things?
Oh, nice. Right. So you can do more custom labeling of the buttons. And I didn't know this. Someone had just told me this yesterday, that you're going to actually be able to, it's going to store a profile of your settings. So as soon as you log in, it says, okay, I remember that you use VoiceOver, and I remember these settings that you have in your preferences, and restore those for you.
Again, it's a thing that I have to say Google does already. So if you lose your Android phone and you get another one, it will restore all your apps, all your settings and everything else. So a lot of this is coming from what Google are doing already, to be
yes,
fair.
So that's what we tried to point out in Podcast 69. Took a little heat for it, because we're not bashing it. It's great they're doing these things. We're just pointing out that they were trying to do some catch up. And
I applaud Apple for doing it. I'm not bashing Apple here, but you know, there's a lot of stuff that's already there in Android. But yes, there's some good stuff in iOS. One thing, I'm not sure if it's true or a rumor, because I haven't tested iOS 5. I understand they're going to lose UK Serena in place of UK Daniel, and I'm not too keen on that one.
Yeah, we hear Daniel everywhere, so...
Yeah, and you know, I like Serena better than Daniel in terms of, you know, vocality, clearness, you know. So I'm not too keen on that one.
You know, Daniel comes across to us in the States as a butler. I don't know.
He sounds like the guy who does the voiceovers on the Weakest Link TV show over here to me. I don't know if it is him. I don't know if they used his voice.
I think it is. John Briggs, yeah.
John Briggs, yeah. You're that's
John
who
Briggs,
it is.
I believe, yeah. That is him, yeah.
Yeah, and he had him here in some Geico insurance, so right, he is a...
But yeah, there's a lot of things that are going to be good about iOS 5, I think. And, you know, I'm personally really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've actually been using iOS 5 now for the last maybe 3 weeks. And I must say, I find it very, very good. One of the things that would be most interested, say, to iPad users is this new items view, where you can actually get a vertical list of the icons on the screen, or all the elements on the screen. So one of the major complaints I had personally with the iPad when it came out originally was the screen was so big, it was so much more real estate that you had to go and search around, which made a lot of blank space in a lot of areas where there was nothing there and you would just pass it. Whereas with this new items view, you can actually get all your items in a list and scroll around them. And to get that, you just double tap and hold on the second tap. So there's some really interesting things happening with it. With the iCloud, you're right, the settings do synchronize across. The settings center, the notification center is very, very good. A few little problems with it that can be got around. You know, the main thing is all of these features are there, but the main problem with Apple with these features, and I've no problem saying this is a negative with Apple, and it's a major complaint that I have, is that they don't document them all that well. For example, now I don't expect documentation to be all that comprehensive at the moment, but when you have the screen locked and you miss a notification and it locks again and you unlock it, then swiping across or double tapping will unlock the screen. It won't activate the notification, which is a bit of a pity.
Right, so now it's going to, you swipe down, right, to get these notifications and then...
Well, you don't even need to swipe down. When you unlock the screen, the notification center is kind of there in a skeleton view type format, where you can actually view the notifications, you just can't action them. Or you can action the last notification, but you can't action any previous notifications. Now, there is a way of getting around that by dragging three fingers down from the top of the screen and then unlocking the phone, and that will bring up the notification center that's been updated in the background. But it's not apparently obvious with, you know, with how you get these things. So the main thing that Apple needs to do now, once they've resolved the hundreds and hundreds of bugs that have been found in iOS 5, is just simply documentation. Documentation is the key here now at this stage. They have all these cool features. And they just need to get them started. Go for it,
Dora. Have you tried the I saw mentioned in the notes this the reader in Safari that purports to cut out clutter on web pages, which is something that I would kill for most of the time as a screen reader user. Is that, have you tried that?
I have to a limited amount on newspapers such as Irish Examiner. I've tried it and I found it very, very good. But in saying that, I find that it's often not necessary because the content is quite easy to find with your index finger, and you just swiped out two fingers after that. But it is of limited use. It is quite good, and that's one of the reasons why I love browsing on the iPhone more than most devices, including even my desktop, because I can find the content straight away without listening to loads of links and headings and all that kind of stuff, and then swipe down to read it. It is quite handy. Unfortunately, some of the features that are going to be released in September aren't yet available yet. For example, iMessage isn't there yet. The newsstand isn't available yet. It's there as an icon on the screen, but it doesn't let you go into the store yet. One thing, and I've spoken to developers for iOS, and they've been quite surprised that Apple haven't released an updated beta yet, 2.5-3 weeks after the actual release of the first beta, because I think we're all waiting for a better release than the one that's there at the moment. Not many bugs have been found when VoiceOver's off, as in when VoiceOver is not used, but once VoiceOver is turned on, there's a myriad of bugs there that need to get fixed.
Oh, not good. And can you, Steve, or anyone comment on what few features are not available in the 3GS?
I don't know. I haven't found any, really, to be honest. I don't know if anyone else knows. I haven't. The other thing I'm looking forward to is over-the-air updates. We can be iTunes-free, folks.
Oh, apparently. Thank the Lord. Oh, please. I can't wait.
We are so tied to iTunes, it's insane with Apple. I'm sorry, it is. But, I mean, you know, we will, I think, be iTunes-free if we want to be. But there you go.
It's brilliant. You plug it in overnight, the same with iOS 5. Plug it in overnight, and it automatically connects to your Wi-Fi and just do all your updates and syncing. It's just so hassle-free. It's brilliant.
Yeah, again, Android does ready, of course. No, but
Android does that already.
Yeah.
He wants to remind us of that. So maybe that's my key to ask you, Steve, is there a lot of interest in Android? I think there's a combination, I guess just as in the States, there's a combination of interest and frustration.
Yes, yes. I mean, there are some, don't get me wrong, folks, I'm not, you know, raving about Android over Apple. I like the Android system, you know, some people like Apple. There are real frustrations with Android at the moment, is because Google, you know, haven't, you know, given us the API stuff, and there's a lot of stuff we can't do, like virtual trackpads and things, and you need a keyboard or you need a virtual trackpad and simple things like that. But mobile accessibility's web browser is great. I mean, it's worth buying it just for the web browser. And, you know, it does most things well. Headings, links, go to move whatever. Don't listen to all the content like you're talking about, Daryl. We can do that pretty much on Android. But there is some frustrations with Android. There are some limitations that clearly are not there with Apple. I mean, Apple have got Braille sewn up. We haven't got Braille yet. But again, there are things that we can do at the moment that iOS can't do, as far as I know, even iOS 5. So I'm happy.
Are there a particular phone, one or two phones you recommend?
I love my Google Nexus One. It's got a trackball, and it's got no keyboard, no physical keyboard, but the mobile accessibility virtual keyboard is fantastic. It's lift and tap. It's much similar to iOS's touch typing, but it has some advantages over iOS. For example, if you want a capital letter, you know, in iOS, you have to go down to the shift key, select it, and then come back to the letter. Well, with this, you just hold the letter down until it says capital and then release. And I like that. And numbers are the same. You hold down a Q, hold it down for long enough, and you get a 1. So, you know, there are various things. There are advantages over iOS, and there are advantages in iOS over Android. So I wouldn't say necessarily at this stage that one is worse or better than the other. They're a different way of doing it, but I'm really enjoying Android at the moment. It appeals to my geekiness.
Right.
I still need buttons. I still need buttons, Steve. I'm sorry. I need physical buttons to touch really and press. And it's I really like iPhones, but there's a practical thing here. You need two hands to use an iPhone. You can't use it when you're walking down a street, for instance. I was using my, I've got a Nokia phone, and I, the other day while walking down Wood Lane, I just picked it up out of my pocket, and within, you know, before I lifted it to my face, I was already dialing my girlfriend, you know, but you can't do that with an iPhone, it's not very good as a phone, very really.
I couldn't agree more, and the proximity sensors are just rubbish, you know, you just brush it against your face and you hang up, you know. And yes, I don't like the touch ethos, Damon, but it's the way we're going. I mean, even Nokia phones now, most of them are touch. So we've got to live with it or not, you know.
I will jump in and buy an iPhone when the right GPS app comes along, you know, and as soon as the right GPS app comes along, I'm going to be there. I'll be there.
Damon, buy Android. The GPS is a lot better and it's free.
Just about a balanced approach on this, I suppose. The Android GPS, in fact, any software GPS, in my opinion, is not worth anything at all, unless it's made by certain companies that are specialized in providing GPS directions.
I don't necessarily agree with that. I mean, In Google, there are two ways you can do it. You can use places to look at what's around you, and you can use maps to navigate you to that place. And it all hands off to each other very nicely. I don't know if you've tried it, but if not, you should try it.
I have, yeah. I have. And the problem that I've found is the directions aren't, and I hate using this term, and I use it, you know, as a last resort, they're not blind-centric. They're great if you know the area well, but they're not particularly good if you've never been to the area before. I'm saying that from quite a bit of experience trying to use the Google apps on an Android for the space of quite a few days, going around a lot of different areas.
I will say as well, Damon, if you're coming to Site Village, come and see me, because we're doing demonstrations of Android.
I will, certainly. I'll be down on the Thursday, so I'll definitely come over.
Yeah.
Since you brought that up, let's talk a little bit about Site Village. Is it strictly kind of a chance for folks to come and get hands-on on the current technologies, or they do training and classes and kind of side room, you know, events? Kind of explain.
They do seminars, which are like an hour. They don't do training as such. Some companies have training on their stands, like, you know, I think Sight and Sound do occasionally, or one or two of them do. But generally they have seminars, which where you go into a room and you have prearranged seminars, and they're an hour, and you can do things on this. We're not going
to
do that.
It's very similar to CSUN.
Yeah, it is. We're not going to do that, because I found that you close the door on a seminar and then nobody wants to join you. So what we're going to do is we're going to publicly demonstrate Android and have times and publish soon times that people can come over and see it in groups and, you know, play with it and hands-on and stuff.
Unfortunately, a lot of these folks like to keep them private and, like you said, closed door. We would love a day when, you know, entities would say, yeah, let's make this an accessible event or something. We could broadcast it around the world so those who can't attend. I guess they fear that people won't show up if they could attend via their computer, but...
I don't even think it's that. I don't think it's that because, to be fair, there's no profit to be gained. In fact, there's more of a loss to be made if people don't show up. Because, you know, look at any of the US companies as an example. You know, they need to send staff over, they need to send representatives over, and all that costs money. So, to be honest, if they could use something that would enable users to, you know, get that kind of hands-on feel from a remote event that they get from a local event, you know, they do it. You know, let's be fair to them, and let's be realistic at the same time. It's not an option.
No, that's right. I must admit as well, Michael, the other problem is that the internet that we get at Site Village is so poor. It tends to be sort of one wireless router and everyone's using it, you know, that it becomes, you know, I'd love to run an accessible event, you know, over the air like that, but we don't get the network, the internet infrastructure for it, really. I remember a few years ago, and I don't think you would mind me saying it, when I first started reselling System Access, Mike Calvo and I did a live Skype chat on my stand, and there were people around quite interested in, and then Mike C logged into my machine remotely, and we were pretending to be trainer and trainee and things like that, and, you know, people were quite interested in that, you know, so if you can make it just, you know, fun instead of just buying and selling, I think that's the key to it, really.
Well, that's the key, and just educating, you know, this whole Cyril Talk theme is just to educate people on options and technology so that we don't just get what someone tells us is available.
Yeah.
But yeah, we have the same issue with hotels over here. That's why you don't see us do more of it. Mm-hmm. Do any of you own Macintosh computers?
No.
No, it got quiet there. I guess not. Okay. So I was just going to mention, of course, they came out with 10.6.8, which is a prerequisite. You must have that to upgrade to Lion. So that's kind of big news. A lot of folks asked if you can actually, since you have to get it from the App Store, does that mean you can't have your own DVD installation? Actually, you can make your own. But that was kind of a big story this month. Yeah, you were talking about GPS. We heard about another one, but it's interesting. Each kind of excels in different areas. We have not found one. I really want one that just is super POI. Just tells me everything as I'm walking past it.
That's Ariadne, kind of, is that the one? Is that the one, Ariadne GPS?
Yes, Ariadne.
Yeah, for the iPhone. Yeah.
Have any of you
played
with that?
Tried it yet?
Yes, I have. It's very, very impressive.
I haven't tried it. No, you tried it, Daria?
Yeah, I have. I have. Not so good at telling you, you know, where you're going. It's great for giving you the directions of where you're going. Great for exploring. Really brilliant for exploring the way you're, you know, the route around you. It takes quite very, very fine motor control skills, especially if you're in a very built-up area. I tried it around Dublin today and I didn't have much success. But I was in a very built-up area, and it just because there were so many different roads running in parallel and running at different angles to each other. Around where I live here, Drogheda, 50 kilometers away, that's not so built up. I find it
It's got a map that you can actually trace your finger across.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, it vibrates when you go across an intersection. It is, absolutely. It almost gives you like an overview of how the map would look, and you can see, for example, there's two streets that I know quite well in Dublin: Nassau Street and St. Frederick Street. And I now know, as a result of my messing around today, that okay, I knew they were running parallel to each other. But actually, the reason why St. Frederick Street doesn't actually come out to the same cross street that Nassau Street does is because they basically meet each other halfway across, really. So, you know, you get a lot more information about the area that you're in that you wouldn't ordinarily get from a standard GPS product or even just from walking around and knowing the area very well.
How do you follow a line on a map that you can't see?
Because as soon as you venture off it, it speaks.
Oh, that's what I need then. You just sold me on the app right there.
Yeah,
that pretty much sums it up right there.
Yeah. Not quite as good, but I use walkie-talkie for similars on Android.
Okay, so just a few other things on the Google front. Are any of you interested in either the Chromebooks, that project, or the Chromium operating system that maybe you can get to work on certain netbooks?
I'm certainly interested, and I'm waiting with bated breath to see what Mike Calvo has to say about it. Because he didn't really tell us much about it. He just told us he got it on the podcast. So I'm waiting for him to run it up, you know, live on the podcast and let us hear it, you know.
Well, not live, but I just did a pre-recorded interview, and we did show browsing the web with what they don't call apps, but they call extensions that let you do things like Facebook. And we show some use of SAMNet. Of course, they're working on that. And HTML5 is going to open up some accessibility options. And we'll talk about getting the device started. So that's coming up in Tech Chat 71 around July 1st. Week of July 4th or 5th. We got a lot of editing to do in this one. We did a lot of stuff. And also Richard Wells is going to show the Chromium operating system. Of course, the difference is that's a standalone, you know, if you got a device, a netbook or laptop or something that you can plug it in and get the drivers for that you can play around with without buying a dedicated piece of hardware. Mm. So all that's coming up. So that should be exciting. Well, here's a hot topic. Let's talk about Windows 8 should be out next year, over around September, October, about 3 years after the launch of Windows 7. And an article gave a review of it, but the big issue seems to be, for accessibility, the dropping of what are called mirror drivers. And those are currently the backbone of what JAWS and WindowEyes is using to get its data. And so right now, they're not faring too well. Now, certainly they have a whole year to figure out alternative means to get that. But so this review talks about right now he's using NVDA and System Access and the built-in narrator, quote, screen reader, end quote. So what screen readers are big in the United Kingdom and Ireland? I wonder if it differs from the States.
I suppose it's the same, really, as the States. You know, you have your main runners, such as JAWS and WindowEyes, and then everything else kind of comes, you know, equal after that, really, for different users. Just come back to the mirror driver kind of thing, though. You know, this could actually be a very good thing for screen readers. Yeah. Maybe it's a slim possibility, but it's a possibility nonetheless. Would it be possible that this might actually be the kick in the right direction that they need to follow a similar type of model that Apple and Linux started and Apple followed? It would be brilliant to see it. I'm not incredibly optimistic, but I'd love to see it. I think the mirror driver has held them back more than anything else.
Yeah, I was going to say, I wonder about, you know, WindowEyes being the second screen reader in the UK, because I think HAL and Supernova gets everywhere, although it's the least stable screen reader I've used, to be honest. But a lot of people seem to like it, and Supernova particularly, because it has full accessibility, magnification as well, you know, and good magnification. So I don't know which is JAWS, of course, is the most popular in the UK, because all of the access to work people go for JAWS, because quite honestly, I don't think they know any different. But
isn't that always the problem?
It's always a problem, yeah. So I think that's where JAWS has really got the stranglehold in the UK. But I shouldn't say this, but in my view, I think it's getting worse. Version 12 is more buggy, and you get blank virtual buffers and all kinds of stuff like that. And it's all great stuff. But,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, so we don't know what these companies are going to have to rewrite their screen readers. I mean, there comes a time when you're going to have to start anew. And,
yeah.
Well, I'm very interested. I don't know if you guys can hear my Skype's playing up a little bit this end. I'm very interested to see how good Narrator will be. And I'm just wondering if this will suddenly put the cat amongst the pigeons. A lot of visually impaired people now are looking at Apple as something of a panacea you know, for access. It's free. Apple VoiceOver is free, and it's wonderful, wonderful what they've done. However, you know, Apple Macintoshes, they are more, they're more expensive. They're quite expensive on the whole. If Narrator is any good as a screen reader, because it's coming out as a screen reader, not just a thing that talks a little bit, you know, what's going to happen there? Because, you know, PCs are quite a bit cheaper. Are blind people going to move away from Apple again?
I was going to say Apple really is not free. It's just that everyone else pays for accessibility as well. I mean, you pay far more for an Apple computer than a PC.
That's it. When you really come down to it, Linux is the only free one, the whole lot.
Exactly, yeah. It's not free. I mean, where they get this idea that the screen reader is free in Apple, it's just that they put a premium on it.
Well, I guess on that Linux front, I know they just released Vinix 3.2. And Dara, I know you've done some tutorials on using Linux. So do you think that's the way to go, or do you kind of look at it as proprietary and should people use something more mainstream?
No, definitely not. Vinix is mainstream. It's based on a mainstream distribution. There has been some work, well, not some, a considerable body of work done on making sure that accessibility has been enabled and optimized in that distribution. But when you come right down to it, the distribution is the same. I don't understand, and in fact, I don't even respect or tolerate any argument that people have that this is any kind of proprietary or specialized distribution. It's not. It's somebody who has taken time out of their day to make sure that the Ubuntu distribution is customized as much as possible to make it speak and make it work out of the box. And I think that's one of the reasons, and I have to take a step back to the start of the show, that's one of the reasons why I like Apple, that's one of the reasons why I like Windows to a certain extent. Because when you're in work, you need to get a job done. When you're in school, you need to get coursework done. You don't have time for messing around. I love messing around with Linux. It's one of my favorite things to do. But at the same time, when I get to a machine and I need to get something done, then I'll stick in a Vinix CD or USB key and I'll get the job done. And that's what I like about Apple and even Windows products to a certain extent. You know, it just gets the job done. And I must say, this latest version of Vinix is exactly the same. It builds on rock-solid platforms such as GNOME 2. It provides Orca 3. There's certain things there that it has innovated with. For example, more text apps, more audible indicators in the boot menu. But at the same time, it continues with the core product, making sure that it's as reliable and as accessible as possible. So I think it really has excelled yet again. And I think it you know, at the same time, if you use Vinix today and you decide, okay, I want to try and mess around with something tomorrow, such as Ubuntu, at least you know that Ubuntu can be made as accessible as Vinix, but you'll just have to put in the work yourself to get it that way.
So is Orca more stable? I think when I played with it in the past, it tended to crash a lot, which was no big deal because just like VoiceOver, you could just turn it back on again with the hotkey. But have they improved that?
Yeah, I think they have. I think they have. Orca is a little bit unfortunate in a way. It's kind of it's based on an idealistic model of let's make sure all these applications work well with me and then I'll work well with them. So for example, GNOME Panel was a big problem for quite a long time. It had memory leaks and therefore it caused memory leaks at Orca because of ATSPI and all that kind of stuff that I don't know enough about that I wish I did, but there you go. You know, so Orca is getting more stable as other applications get more stable with the accessibility framework and infrastructure. It has more work to do, but at the same time, just like certain applications have built in keystrokes now for completely getting rid of all running processes relating to that application, Orca's had that from the start. You go into Alt+F2 for run, you type in Orca, and not only does it restart Orca, it closes down any other processes that may have been running Orca to make sure that you have a clean version running again. So, you know,
what is this Yasr's, Y-A-S-R?
Y-A-S-R is an alternative screen reader, from my knowledge. Now, I've never used it. I've never seen any need to use it because Orca gives me all of the access I need. But the one thing about Linux is it's all about choice. You know, you can use Evolution or you can use Thunderbird as your email client. You can use MC, you can use Pico, or you can use VI as your text editor. It's all about choice.
I think that's
that's basically what it's all about.
I think that's what I don't like about the Apple ethos, and that is that you've got no choice of screen reader. You know, you've got VoiceOver or VoiceOver. So that's me. I mean, I like competition. I think it's healthy and different ways of working.
Definitely. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that is definitely the way I would have thought for a very, very long time. And still is the way I think when I'm doing hobbyist kind of things. But when I get into work and I need to get a job done, then I don't care about choice. I care about functionality. And whatever gives me the functionality I need, then that wins. But I completely understand you only get that functionality when you have competition boosting it along and, you know, getting things to excel in different areas.
I mentioned YASR because I don't know if that was newly added to the latest Vinix because it said it was one of three screens.
I think it was in version 3 that was added. In version 3, they added a whole host of different applications. And what they did was they cut away some of the core tools. For example, you won't find an abundance of graphics editing tools because simply it's kind of understood, look, you're blind, you're not going to be going editing any major visual masterpieces in a hurry. So they bribe Peter to pay Paul kind of thing. So, you know.
Was that for speed and performance or just to get the size down, make it fit on a CD?
Just to get the size down. Just to get the size down so it fits on CD. Now they're giving DVD versions as well. Okay. And they're making certain applications. They're making distributions suitable to certain things. For example, they make one for office use, one for productivity or programming use kind of thing. You know, so they'll, or one for sound use. So they'll have applications targeting that kind of subset of user. And then all of the accessibility features and applications that you might possibly need that you can, of course, install at your own free will, even if you don't install them with the Vinix distribution.
Okay, you are listening to Serial Talk Tech Chat 108, this month in Access Technology for June 2011. And this edition is sponsored by Vanda Pharmaceuticals with some new technologies to help you improve the quality of your sleep. You can learn more at vandapharma.com. That's VandaPharma.com or get the link at serialtalk.com. Well, Microsoft has just released Office 365. And I'm curious, have you, maybe I'll start with you, Damon. I don't know what tools you use working for the BBC, but do you think the UK is going to embrace this technology, kind of putting work content into the cloud, or have they adopted Google Docs as is done by some companies in the States?
Well, currently at the BBC, I'm using Outlook 2003 and Word 2003, which I think was it's quite a while back now. But it takes big corporations quite a while to move on sometimes when you have various different things that hook into it different tools within the corporation. I know, for instance, that the Guardian, a big newspaper over here, they've got everything in the cloud now. They just got rid of all of their email, for instance, and are using Google Mail for about the last year, Gmail, I think you call it over there, which is it's really interesting. Windows, the thing that I don't know enough about, and I'm hoping you guys can help me out on, when it comes to cloud computing, is Windows 365, which is it's the whole Office suite essentially in the cloud, as I understand it, with a few other interesting bits added, like Team Talk, is it? Team Screen? It's all within a browser, and of course browsers have become kind of like mini computers within themselves, haven't they? The thing I like about the old fashioned installed software like Word and Excel, the old style, is that, you know, you've got all that just excellent menu driven sort of functionality. Alt this, control that, control alt this. You can get an awful lot of stuff very simply and quickly via keystrokes and not have to wait a long time or wonder whether a particular web function is going to work, because, you know, Java and JavaScript and whatever inevitably seems to let me down. Alt keys I can never seem to get to work. Anchor links never seem to work for me either, and these are all in web things. I wonder, are we taking a backward step with all this? How easy is it going to be to use? Are all the functions going to be on the screen all the time, like on a web page, and thus not quite so easily findable? I just spoke a lot just then.
You'll be happy to know that most of the happy to know that most of the applications that you access from 365 can be accessed via, for example, SkyDrive, and via applications that are installed on your local machine. Office 2010 has a lot of integration with Office 365, especially the Service Pack 1 of Office 2010. So you won't need to base your entire day on web-based applications. But the one thing to look out for in terms of accessibility is, Some of this stuff is based on Silverlight. Now, Outlook and Office, for example, isn't. But Windows Azure, certainly, the control panel for that is based on Silverlight, from what I saw a few weeks ago when I was looking at it. So there are some accessibility challenges. So I think we need to be really careful, and we need to be continuing to put pressure on companies like Microsoft. Hey, don't forget us here. We're a small voice, but we actually still need to use your products, and we still need to depend on your products. So don't make them fully...
As I understand, you can have complete applications, can't you, that are web-based, and you wouldn't even know that they're web-based. So you could still have your alt menus and various things like that. You know, it can all be done with HTML5 and with ARIA, screen reader support for ARIA is coming along, and UIA and stuff like that, automation, whatever. So I think, Damon, it's probably going to be part and part, is my opinion. It's probably going to be you'll still have your installed application, but... You know, your document will get saved up in the cloud rather than on your system. But I think from what Mike was saying about Google Chrome again, it saves a local cache on your machine as well. So if you're down on the internet, you can still carry on using whatever you're working on. That's how I understand it.
Yes, obviously the objective is for, you know, collaboration, people in multiple offices to be able to work on the same content. But, you know, and my big question, of course, is accessibility. I heard there were some holes, and I think Dara defined that pretty well, the strengths and weaknesses that we have right now. So I'm just curious if you think that'll be adopted, or people are going to take a wait-and-see attitude.
No. It won't be adopted on a large scale, and I know that for certain at the moment. And I'll tell you very easily why. And Microsoft are trying to Microsoft and Google, of course, are trying to solve this. And the reason is data security, data privacy, and data retention. Any organization that is over a certain size, such as the BBC or any government or any other company that's quite big, will have all of these different policies. And unfortunately, the cloud doesn't enforce these policies. So, you know, for example, you know, you need to keep email for 30 days and you need to keep monthly archives of that email for the next 3 years. That's not so easy to do on the cloud, depending on the cloud service you go to. Also, within certain companies and certain governmental departments, you need to make sure that your data doesn't go outside the country. Again, not possible with the cloud. Even in Windows Azure and the cloud, it's not possible to go in the cloud. And that's one of the reasons why Microsoft did a bit of a roundabout turn not so long ago. And they said, okay, we can give you Windows Azure, but we can also give you things like DFS and Exchange on local data stores so that you can have your data retention. So that's the main reason why this isn't going to be adopted in the same scale as they might hope. Certainly for small businesses or small to mid-sized businesses, it might be adopted. But even mid-sized businesses don't really like the idea of having their data, especially confidential data that they're responsible for, on somebody else's server that, you know, when they're responsible for. And of course, then the other thing as well is, although there's local cache, internet connectivity, especially in Ireland, and I know in certain parts of England as well, isn't always 100% reliable. So there's always that fear of, well, what if we've a loss of internet connectivity just at the one time that one person needs certain data, you know?
Well, and of course, my concern, you know, as a business owner, I would say, well, how do I know that someone hasn't looked at it? Yeah, maybe it's there, it's intact. As far as I know, it's all good. But how do I know someone didn't retrieve it at some point along the way? So I'd be curious to see how that's adopted. I mean, there's a lot of benefits to cloud computing, but yeah, for anyone that feels that they're data is sensitive, and most people feel that it is, even when it isn't. Things like user manuals, you know. So, I'd be very curious to see. I want to talk about.
We've seen the benefit of cloud computing for years. I was going to say this with system access. You know, you've only got to look at DocuScan Plus, you know, where you can scan something now and then retrieve it from any computer, which is kind of cool, you know. So, you know, there are benefits to it.
Oh, most definitely. I want to talk about Skype because there's been a few changes. Of course, Microsoft acquiring it for $8.5 billion in the U.S. Appears to the government entities responsible have kind of written off saying, yeah, we're good with it. Go ahead. So maybe that'll happen by the end of the year. But the big thing is the latest version has dropped what's called Skype Extras. And this is good and bad news. It's good in the sense that Extras were used for third-party apps, and many people, myself included, actually had a very corrupted Skype that I uninstalled and reinstalled, could not get it to work, and it was all tied to Skype Extras and some third-party game that they were trying to push and get installed. So Skype has decided to remove that. The bad news is that this Extras is used for quite a few things in terms of accessibility. One of them is a program called Skype Talking that adds some functionality, including the ability to read caller ID, who's actually calling when you hear your Skype phone ring. One feature I really like is a hotkey that I don't think is in Skype natively that lets you add people to an existing conference when they call you. But I also understand this is used for windowized scripts. And of course, a lot of people like to record their calls. And maybe this is part of why there was some asking for it to be removed. But so things like Call Burner, and of course, I myself use something called MX Skype Recorder, that these will no longer work if you didn't have Skype Extras installed. So I think, it's my understanding, that even though the newest version doesn't have it, the fact that you already have Skype Extras installed, you're still good. But if you get a new version from the latest 5.3, and of course 5.5 now, beta will not allow that. There's no Skype Extras as an option. So you're at a point of, if you want that accessibility, you're going to actually have to go to the Skype shop and install an older version. Does anyone have any thoughts on that?
Not really, except that, you know, as you say, people are going to want the, because the other thing about scripts, like there's also the Doug Lee's Jaws scripts and the WindowEye scripts. And of course, System Access does it too. And that is that they announce who's online, who's offline, and, you know, things like that. You're going to lose all that, of course. But, you know, if you don't care, then that's fine. I have no opinion on it, really. I mean, I like to know sometimes when people are coming online and offline, but I can switch it on and off with WindowEye. You know, I can switch events on and off and things like that. So I don't know that I would necessarily lose sleep over it, but, you know, I can see
Google do it better.
Well, that's a good point, because Google is working on this, you know, that's WebRTC. They are actually going to integrate an audio video bidirectional chat system into the Chrome browser. So maybe Skype should be very concerned. Microsoft spent a lot of money for a technology that's going to have some fierce competition very shortly.
Well, they might bring it into IE11 or something, you know. You never know. They might integrate Skype.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah, absolutely. But I've never tried Google's RTC, so I couldn't tell you, Dara, to be honest. But I think Skype is brilliant. The audio quality of Skype is brilliant. But you know, it may upset.
I think you know yourself, right? When you get a fright, the first thing you do is make sure it doesn't. You know, you remove the element that caused the fright in the first place.
Yeah,
I don't know if it's going to be a permanent thing. Like this, it's not a major version that they've done this on. You never know. It might come back in the next minor version with a few new tweaks, or, you know, yourself. I don't know. There's so many different companies that depend on the extra services. I know of one company that basically based their entire interconnectivity with VoIP systems on this extras service. You know, I don't think Skype are going to let that go so easily. So.
The other thing I was going to say, Dara, is because they've removed extras, they haven't removed the API, have they?
I assume not.
So presumably people could, you know, you saying, Michael, there that we're losing the ability to have these events and things. I'm not sure about that, because the API is still there. WindowEye scripting could hack into that, and I would imagine, as could your scripting.
It would need to be exposed, and it would need to have a hook and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we have to ask Jeff Bishop. He's the Skype scripter for WindowEye.
Yeah, I just thought I thought the Extras Manager was required for those scripts, so I could be wrong on that fact.
I think so, because I don't think the API is going. I don't know. To authorize it, yeah.
Okay, correct. Got you. Well, just a few other things. It looks like Skype is going to come out with a app for the iPad in video chat, so you'll be able to take advantage of that beautiful screen and have video chat with other folks. And also, here in the States, I think this is interesting, that U.S. Congress is actually going to adopt using Skype, and constituents will be able to actually place Skype phone calls either to their congressmen or their staffers. So, do you think anything like that would happen in the UK or Ireland, or how is the interaction with the government?
I know for a fact that actually Ireland already have Skype integration with many of the VoIP systems in their government departments, so they can allow that kind of stuff, and that's actually integrated with their constituents representation database system. I also know as well that they're integrating that same system with iPads, etc. So we are on the way for that kind of thing.
And
do you want to go ahead?
All I was going to say was I recorded an interview on In Touch over Skype, so the BBC are certainly using Skype.
Oh, well, yes and no. I can't put it on my computer.
No, they wanted me to do an interview last minute, and I couldn't get up to London to do it. So I said, I can do it on Skype. And they said, yeah, we'll do that. You know, so we did.
Yeah, we can put it down the same pipes as the ISDN lines, but that's too much detail. What was I going to say? What were we talking about?
We're talking about the integration of Skype into corporation. Yeah,
got a lot of other stuff here. Do you guys either want to go a little longer? If you got to cut off at the top of the hour, then we'll have to quickly. We're down to about 12 minutes, and we may want to take some questions from our participants as well. Which we go along if you want.
I think people have heard us waffling on for long enough. Go and take a few questions there from participants.
Okay, we can do that. I want to ask you about accessible TV. Now, in the States, Code Factory from Spain has released their TV speak for the U.S. market. It does, as claimed. I was a beta tester of the product. It certainly does let you read the electronic program guide, know what channel you're on, let you know what show you're currently watching and what's coming up in the future, let you record shows, either video or audio. And it does, as claimed, my two cons with the product are, A, the U.S. price is $245 with Microsoft Speech or $295 with Acapella. And the other thing is, in the States, it's only limited to over-the-air terrestrial HD TV channels. In my case, that's five physical stations totaling a number of eight channels. No cable television, no satellite receivers. Can't get an interface to work with it. So maybe that's something that, you know, I think they are working on it. But I want to talk to you, though, because you have made more strides in the United Kingdom with accessible set-top boxes. Who wants to take that one on?
Well, we have the Goodman's set-top box now, which I haven't had any experience of. And we also have this thing called Sky Talker, which works with Sky Satellite system that we have in the UK. I beta tested the Code Factory TV speak for about 15 seconds because it didn't work with my tuner, which was a good start. It doesn't work with the Nebula Media digital tuner, it would appear, for some reason. But my very favorite thing to do is to get TV Plus for the iPhone. Can't recommend it highly enough. Written by Ed Lee. And then use a Sky Plus box, which is a PVR, a personal video recorder, that we have in the UK. And you can just look at your TV programs, hit the record button, and it says, confirm, do you want to record it? And you say yes, and then you hit the thanks button when it says it's been going to be recorded. And you come home and you find it's there on your box. Simple as that. You can also send text messages using your mobile phone to Sky Plus. So Sky Plus is by far, I would say, the most accessible system, even though people say that it, you know, is more difficult to use than some of the others.
And the audio description is brilliant, actually.
Audio description is amazing, and there's such a lot of it. 20% of programs now on a lot of channels are audio described.
I'm surprised it's not more.
Mm. Yeah, it does seem a lot now.
I would say they're underestimating that.
Yeah.
Well, the statutory requirement, I think, is still about 6 or 8%, but Sky Television and the BBC, ITV, Channel 4, Channel 5 have all, off their own bat, decided that they will hit a 20%. Target, which is, this is really good. But then they're also trying to avoid government legislation on the matter. We don't have legislation to, for 20%. But we've got another platform. You know, in the UK, we have, I'm not quite sure what it's like in Ireland, we have essentially sort of four main TV platforms now. We have Sky Digital Satellite, we have Freesat, and we have Freeview, which is sort of the default digital over-the-air terrestrial television, and we have cable as well, which is just one company here, Virgin Media. So not much in the way of competition other than through the other platforms. But the really interesting thing is that next year, somewhere around next April, another platform is coming in, which is UView. And this is where it gets interesting. This is where access is getting more. It's not, we're moving. It seems a shame that in the UK we've had digital terrestrial television since 1998, and only now we're getting the Goodman's box, which is giving us access to the EPG. And the EPG is the most basic thing you could possibly have access to. You know, what's on now and next and all that malarkey. But UView, it's not just going to be a whole suite of television channels, 30, 40 TV channels like we have on Freeview digital terrestrial TV at the moment. It's also going to be video on demand. So there's going to be a broadband hookup, and you'll be able to watch. It'll be great. The EPG won't just go forward 7 days. It'll also go backwards 7 days. So you will be able to watch the last 7 days of television from next April if you have UView. And this is going to be the default platform very, very soon in the UK. And access to video demand is something we don't have. However, UView is quite interesting. Although accessible set-top boxes that talk won't be coming out to begin with, there is an accessible API that is built into this. And we will be able to use our iPhones and our laptops, netbooks, or whatever, to be able to access all this stuff and make stuff come through our television sets, which is interesting.
Yeah, sure is.
Unfortunately, over here, we're backwards. You know, we're lucky to have televisions. we have a company called Serview, who are now going to be providing digital TV from August 2011. They will take over from our analog provider. Unfortunately, their box isn't accessible, isn't at all accessible, and they have no plans to make it accessible in the future. So, to put it lightly, we're not doing too well.
Okay, we have two stories I definitely want to cover in our remaining 6 minutes. It looks like you mentioned this, that a service, the ability to send direct messages on Twitter, is going to disable at midnight here, July 1st. So do any of you use Easy Chirp, I think, which was formerly Accessible Twitter?
I do. Yeah. I do use it, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, I use it at work. We can't use Twitter at work because Twitter is the default, obviously must be the default way that most blind people use Twitter these days. It's amazing.
TW Inbox is quite good as well. Give it its,
you know. TW Inbox is good, yeah. But Twitter's not my default. I tend to do more Twitter on my phone now, both Android and iOS. And on iOS, I use Tweetlist, and on Android, I use Seismic. So, no, I'm not tied to my computer with Twitter as often as I used to be. But I think a lot of people will miss Twitter. And the reason for this DM disabling is because Twitter want you to reauthorize before you can DM. Now, you can't, because you have to have the Twitter client go to twitter.com with, you know, declaring itself its name and such, and so that it can be authorized as an app. You can't just go with your browser and authorize. So I believe as from midnight tonight, you will no longer, I think, if I'm right, be able to direct message anyone with Twitter. That will be the only limitation, as I understand it. You will be able to send replies and so on and mentions, but no DMs.
Right, and the old school Twitter interface is about to be eliminated, yeah. Or maybe that's at midnight as well.
Maybe, yeah.
Wow, so
Easy Chirp is pretty interesting as well. I've been using it recently. What interests me is that, you know, as you're typing your message, you know, you get up to 140 characters. In my ears, via my screen reader, it tells me what character I'm on. You know, 88, 87, 86, 85, 84. And how does it do that?
It would annoy the hell out of me, that. No, the other thing about web browser-based tweeting is that you don't know when tweets are coming in. It doesn't always tell you. You know, it doesn't update and always tell you. But, you know, you don't know when mentions and DMs are coming in. So I like the...
Unless you use live regions or another kind of inline frame that refreshes or...
Yeah, yeah.
Certainly ways around it. But the thing is, though, just to keep in mind, you know, there is a new version of Twitter coming out, version 5. And the Twitter team is a quite a small bunch of people, and they are working very hard, because I know that they have quite a few features coming out that are going to be... to be honest, and I've no affiliation with them yet again... I have no affiliation with them. I have no ties. But to be honest, they are going to make things a lot easier for any kind of form of social networking. They're opening the gate to a lot of different access. They have that out.
I think the only problem with Twitter, as I see it, is that it's a kind of two-handed job unless you redefine all the keys. So people who have motor difficulties and people that can only use one hand, it's
Look at my website. Look at my website in the blog scripts or blog section for the JAWS Laird commands for Twitter and for other applications. And that allows you to use Twitter and other applications using just one hand. Also allows you to use Twitter directly from a Braille display with no intervention.
So long as you
I saw Christopher Toth the other day, the guy who wrote Twitter. He was talking about access to OPML files, I think that's what they're called. So I'm wondering and hoping that the next version of Twitter may have some kind of feed reader in it. That's just a wild hope, though.
Twitter's powerful. I mean, if you had a UI to it, that thing would be used by the masses. I have no doubt about it. And he is a genius. There's no doubt about that.
I think if I understand, he's going to have sticky keys eventually. So he's going to have a mode that you can go into by pressing Windows control space or something like that, and then you can use just the up and down arrows to do it. That would do it, wouldn't it? I mean, if you could stick it into a mode and then come out by pressing escape or something, that would help the people.
That's basically what I did previously. Before that was released in the beta, that's what I had in the alert keys. The only difference with the scripts that I've done is it works with the... I've tested it on the Braille Connect 12 and the Focus 40 Blue, but I know it works in other Braille displays as well, so you can control Quitter independently from the Braille display without using the keyboard at all, so it's quite handy. For that said, collective of people who can't use Quitter with, you know, two hands.
Again, that's with JAWS, though, isn't it?
It is JAWS specific, absolutely, which kind of goes against all mentality of Quitter.
So, well, you could script for
I had no choice. Well, I could, but that would involve learning the scripts for WindowEyes. Yeah, I haven't got that far yet.
Well, if you know Visual Basic, you know scripting for WindowEyes, to be honest. You can do any language with WindowEyes, which is better than the limited JAWS proprietary language.
Okay, I want to hit our final story here, which we didn't really give a lot of coverage on Serotalk, and apparently it was a big deal, understandably so. I think it predated June, but it's still... you said one of the number one topics for discussion, and that was an actual cutback in disability benefits for residents of the UK.
It's been rolling on for quite a while now. The Conservative government took over last May, and you would be forgiven for thinking, I think, and a lot of people have voiced this, you would be forgiven for thinking that disabled people were to blame for the economic collapse in the world if you lived in the UK right now, because what they're meeting the issues with is an awful lot of benefit cutbacks. So people who've been living for many years and supporting themselves, disabled people, on things like disability living allowance, employment support allowance, all that kind of thing, may get a very rude awakening by 2013. And it's all in a drive to push people back to work. I think that there's this very big, somewhat right-wing tabloid driven idea, certainly, that a lot of people on benefits are just wasters who are at home. When the rest of the world is getting up and going to work, they have their curtains drawn and are just in bed frittering away the nation's money on, you know, on booze and fags. Fags are cigarettes in the UK. Sorry, everybody.
There used to be that in the US back in the day, yeah.
Just in case that causes any confusion. So, yeah, it's a huge issue. It's such a massive issue. Very, very scared disabled people over here. And blind people. I don't know, what's it like in Ireland? We're in a terrible financial situation. Are disabled people being hit there? Well, they are,
but I have a question for you, and I don't want this to come across the wrong way, and I'm sure it will. But out of, say if there's 100 people on, 100, let's narrow this down specifically to blind people, okay? If there's 100 blind people on welfare, right, how many out of those 100 could actually get up tomorrow morning and say, right, that's it, let's start actually actively looking for work?
Well, this is the thing, Darrell. I've often thought about this, because apparently there are 75 or something percent of blind people unemployed, I believe.
Yeah.
I may be wrong in that, but I think that's right. And there has been for years. You know, I don't know when that statistic was last updated. And, you know, you have to wonder sometimes whether they're not looking for work, because at the moment...
Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's just very hard. And I must say, retaining employment, from my experience in my role, retaining employment is quite difficult, because I'm constantly being hit with accessibility challenges with technology. But the thing is, I have to ask, and the reason why I have to ask is only from my time on Twitter over the last 3 years. I see so many people on Twitter every day getting up and, you know, going online and sitting there for the day. And I don't ask it out of badness. I simply I would be interested to know how many of those people actually actively try and find work.
Well, it does feel to me there's a generation of blind people who do get up and they do, you know, spend their day on their computer. And some of them, I do think, you know, almost think of that as their job, and they're networking and they're talking to people and they're getting on with their life. A lot of this, I don't think, is about laziness. It's about education and opportunity. You know, blind people are a lot. I feel very, very lucky, that I've got the job that I have got. And I think it was I don't know how much skill was involved. Maybe I just met the right people at the right point and had the right kind of education and, you know, took all those right paths and decisions along the line. I think it takes an awful lot as a blind person to get that absolutely right and be in the right place. And it's difficult. Networking is a big thing. You know, networking's terribly difficult if you're blind. I have this. You know, you can't network at conferences. You can't network even in the office. I work in a huge open plan office with some very powerful and important and famous journalists. But I don't even know when they're there half the time. I don't know if I'm going to interrupt them at their desks. So just at a, you know, at a very basic level, blind people have got it very, very difficult. So I throw it back at you. Maybe it's not quite so easy.
No, just pick okay.
And say, come over here, bro.
Okay, let me retaliate then by saying it's that mentality of thinking that we have it difficult that actually helps us alienate ourselves from the fact that really, okay, yes, it's difficult, but how much of that do we impose on ourselves? You know, it's difficult, yeah, but for God's sake, get up and get on with it. You know, there's people out there much worse than we are that have to get up and get on with it. So, yeah, definitely there's a lot of issues, a lot of barriers. But at the end of the day, you know, you have bills to pay. So, you know, that's... And I don't mean to be bad at, you know, there's people with different situations and different circumstances. No, and I'm not trying to, you know.
You've got it right. Maybe the Conservative government have got some amazing thought up their sleeves. Maybe they've done some research into this. Maybe they've done some modelling. And maybe they've worked out that this economic, you know, pulling away of the economic carpet from underneath you, maybe that is going to make people, you know, kick them in their complacency. And yeah.
Well, interesting. I do want to take one question before we wrap. Go and finish your thought there, and I'll throw out this final question.
Well, I was just going to say, maybe, just maybe, who knows, maybe it is the right thing to do. Maybe this could result in more disabled people being out there in the workplace and hence mingling with people more. And, you know, we all know the effects of mingling with people, networking with more people, working with people. When people see other disabled people living their lives, getting on, then systems change, structures change, you get remembered.
Right, it's a chain reaction. Exactly.
Yeah.
And we have to start somewhere. Now, what they're doing in the U.S. is basically they're saying they're not really going, they're verifying that people truly have physical disabilities, but getting off the rolls the people who got benefits or get benefits from mental disabilities. So it's okay to be mentally ill and go out and work, but physically, as long as you meet their guidelines in the state, you're still good. Let me throw this question out here. It says that unlocked phones and multiple carriers is a great advantage across the pond. They ask what other great technologies, where do you feel that you have a leg up on us in that?
Well, we always get phones way before you. You only got to look at Nokia phones, you know. I mean, I've been selling talks for about 10 or 15 years. And we always get, like, you know, when the N95 came out, the US had it about a year later, and the N96 came out, and again the same. The US always seemed to be the last, in my view, to get phones, and it seems very strange. But then again, they were a long time taking up SMS, weren't they? I mean, we were text messaging years before the US was, and now they think they've invented it, kind of thing. You know?
Yeah, but of course, Apple would be one exception to that. But also, your prices are different. I still think you're paying more than we are in the States.
I'm really not sure about that. What do you say?
I pay £40 a month. How much do you pay?
I pay about 50 for 300 minutes, 300 texts, unlimited amount of calls and texts to my own network, about a gig and a half, maybe 2 gig of data.
Yeah, I'll pay about
that's fair.
But you were saying unlocked iPhones was $649 in the US.
Just rolled it out $649. So basically that's for the 16 gig. So $450 extra from buying it with a 2-year plan.
Yeah. So they're £499 over here if you buy them on the Apple Store,
which probably equates to the same amount in dollars, really.
Yeah.
I suppose one advantage over here compared to the US is our contract is typically 18 months instead of 2 years.
In the UK, they tend to try and steer you to 24 months now. Certainly, T-Mobile tried to do it with me, and I said, no, I want to keep my 12-month contract, and they let me after some haggling, but they wanted me to take up a 24. And when I got my iPhone, which is on Orange, they insisted that I took a 2-year contract. So it's getting much the same now, I think, as well.
But see, now in the US with AT&T gobbling up T-Mobile, I don't know that there's an advantage in buying an unlocked phone other unless you travel, because you're not going to, at least financially, you're not going to derive the benefits from it.
Well, again, you might have two SIM cards from different providers. you know, that's the thing.
Well, that is true. You can do some third party. You know, you do different things, do data with one network, and
And I mean,
but to be thinking about it, right? Look at something like the Android or the iPhone. It's almost like an always on device. You know, to do that, you're going to have to turn it off and take the SIM card out and put it back on. From my understanding of it, anyway. You know, so really, we live in a society of convenience, really. So I doubt there's many people who are going to say, you know what? I'm going to save 1 cent. I'm going to take out my SIM card.
No, nobody's mentioned, though, Michael, if you buy a locked phone, you also buy a branded phone. And apart from Apple, which is good, all the others, Android and Symbian, they're all branded phones. And some of the features have been disabled. And I know you've had this, haven't you, Michael, in the States, where they disable tethering, for example.
Oh, AT&T is notorious for disabling features. So that would...
For example, my wife here has got an HTC Desire, which is an HTC phone on T-Mobile, and they've disabled tethering. I've got my Nexus One, which I bought unlocked, and I can use tethering. So they can't disable me. That's another reason to buy unlocked phones.
The other thing, though, just about the Google phone, one of the reasons why I really like them is you can download the ROM from any operator in the world, basically.
Yes, you can.
And enable their features, which is really cool. So like if you like an Australian telco, you just download their ROM. And in fact, the reason why I say the Australian one is because the Australian one seems to be the best at the moment. I was testing that on one of the Samsung ones there a while ago. I forget what one it was. And it was really brilliant. You know, some of the bugs that I was finding on the supplied one here just weren't there. And there was some cool new widgets on it. It was great.
Yeah. So again, if you want the features that your operator disables, then buy an unlocked phone. You know, that's how I look at it.
Right. So, you know, you just have to make an informed decision. Of course, they've said they cannot make it illegal to jailbreak a phone, but then you also could break accessibility. So, you know, it's a catch-22.
Yeah. If you jailbreak it or root it, in terms of Android, and you brick the phone, you know, you invalidate the warranty, of course. That's another thing. So you've got to be a bit careful.
Definitely. Well, I think that's a time to put the wraps on. I thank all three of you gentlemen, Steve Nutt, Damon Rose, and Daryl O'Haley. Great input, great insights. Hopefully we'll have at least one or maybe all of you back again sometime in the future. It's a really good...
I'd like to be back. So good to be back.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, we invite you to join us for our tech chats. Maybe we need to look at maybe moving it a little earlier so our friends in the UK and Ireland can join us, because right now it normally comes up around 2 in the morning, I do believe.
Yes.
I tried to stay up for it once, but I fell asleep halfway through. What with this non-24-hour sleep-wake disorder malarkey, it's a bit of a problem.
Oh, it's a horrible affliction. I feel sorry for you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, maybe I won't go there. You believe it's malarkey. No. You think it's just...
Oh, no. I've got it. And I, you know, I've been speaking to your fella, actually, and it's a revelation.
Well, see, because I wonder if that's part of why there's such high unemployment among the blind. I really do.
Because they just can't be getting up in the morning?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, if you're total, it's harder, isn't it? Because you really are daylight deprived.
I don't know. Like, there's that Arcadian rhythm thing, you know. But if you're in a routine, because I'm total, if you're in a routine, then to be honest, I'm up at 6 o'clock in the morning, and already I can feel, you know what, it's actually time for sleep. You know, if you're in a routine and you're working for 8 hours a day and you're commuting for under 4 hours a day, you know, it doesn't matter what kind of sleep deprived kind of stuff you have. If you're doing that every day, you will need sleep.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, we all folks get tired, blind, insighted. That's the thing to remember, folks. But, well, we thank you for your input. Again, join us. We will be doing convention coverage at ACB and NFB. And certainly any of you or anyone else listening, if you want to do some reports from Site Village, create some audio files or something, just let us know, resources@cyriltalk.com. We'd love to get some reports of some folks just walking around, kind of what you see, and new exciting technologies, and, or, you know, interviews, whatever you want to do. Just put in your 2 cents. We would certainly love to hear from you. So until we meet again next week, as always, we say stay connected and stay directed.
Do you feel like your sleep patterns are different from the rest of the world? Do you sometimes feel the unwanted urge or need to fall asleep during the day, even when you need to be awake? Do you also feel just too wide awake to fall or stay asleep during the night? If you are blind, this could be a real sleep problem related to a lack of light needed to keep your body in sync. Learn more about an ongoing clinical research study that is evaluating a new investigational treatment for this type of sleep problem. When calling, you can also complete a short sleep survey. When calling, you must be between 18 and 75 years of age and totally blind. Volunteers will be compensated for their participation in the clinical study and will receive study-related medication, medical evaluations, and transportation at no cost. If you or someone you know might be affected, call toll-free 1-888-389-7033 or email info@non24registry.com. That's info@non24registry.com. This concludes another Serotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Serotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.